Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host. And joining us on the line is Professor Isaac Saini of Dalhousie University and author of Cuba, Revolution in Motion. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. And thank you for having me again on your program, Phil. I always enjoy it.
Okay. Well, we certainly are glad to be talking to you because on November 13th and 14th at the United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street, there's going to be a special event, Africa's Children Return, Cuba and Africa, African Liberation. And, of course, you're one of the principal organizers of it, along with a different book list and others. Tell us about this. Cuba has a very – I know this is your area's – expertise. Cuba has a relationship to Africa that most of the world doesn't, I should say academia, doesn't actually realize. And what is the focus of the program and you're hoping to accomplish?
Well, November 5th of this year will represent the 40th anniversary of Cuba's international solidarity or military mission in Angola to help Angola repel invasion from racist South Africa, the apartheid state at that time. Mm-hmm. So over a 15-year period, this is the length of the Cuban mission, over 330,000 Cubans served in, as soldiers to defend Angolan independence and also to participate in the Southern African liberation struggles. So this was an immense undertaking by a small, poor, undeveloped so-called third world nation. And it's important to understand, and I think it's important here to quote Nelson Mandela, and this is what he said. And he said, the Cuban people hold a special place in the hearts of the peoples of Africa. The Cuban internationalists have made a contribution to African independence, freedom, and justice unparalleled for its principled and selfless character. Cubans came to our regions as doctors, teachers, soldiers, agricultural experts, but never as colonizers. They have shared the same trenches as us in the struggles against colonialism, underdevelopment, and apartheid. Hundreds of Cubans have given their lives literally in a struggle that was first and foremost not theirs, but ours. As Southern Africans, we salute them. We vow never to forget this unparalleled example of selfish internationalism. So the 40th anniversary is upon us, and I think as we now enter the United Nations International Decade for People of African Descent, the subject of Africa's Children Return, Cuban African Liberation, assumes great poignancy and relevance. And we will actually have, as one of the principal, in fact, the keynoter for the conference, is Nicolas Hernandez Guyen, who is a major Afro-Cuban scholar, and he's president of the Nicolas Guyen Foundation. He is the grandson of the very internationally acclaimed and famous, the huge poet, Nicolas Guyen. So he's the grandson of Nicolas Guyen. He's sort of his namesake, who was Cuba's national poet laureate, and is renowned for the beauty of his poetry and his political stance that he did take. He's an international figure. So Guyen will be talking about Africa and Cuban. This is Nicolas Hernandez Guyen, his grandson, who's a major scholar in his own right, will be talking about the African-Cuban relationship, the impact of Africa on Cuba, and why hundreds of thousands of Cubans are willing to demonstrate such a profound solidarity with Africa, especially in Angola. So that's the Friday night, which starts at 7 p.m. at United Steelworkers Hall on November 13th, will commemorate Cuba's role in African liberation struggles with a tribute also to the late Jorge Risquet, who passed away just about a couple of weeks ago, who was a historic member of Cuba's revolutionary leadership and a participant in the African anti-colonial national liberation struggles. As you may remember, Phil, we had him here as a special guest, a special honored guest in September of 2013, when we did another event focusing on a series of major battles in Southern Africa that Cuba played a critical role in that accelerated the end of apartheid. On Saturday, from in the morning and in the afternoon, starting at 9:30 and running to about 4:30, we're going to have more detailed workshops dealing on Cuba's role in African liberation struggle and current solidarity in Africa. So we have a film, Cuba and African Liberation Struggles. We have a workshop, Guilty of Defeat of Defending Africa, Soweto de Quito Cuanaval, Cuba and the War to Liberate Southern Africa. We have a very special presentation by John Cook, who is one of the leading specialists on Cuba in Canada, and he's the author of the acclaimed book, Healthcare Without Borders, Understanding Cuban Medical Internationalism. Cuba has more doctors serving abroad than anybody else, and he'll be talking about Cuba and Ebola, yet another example of Cuban medical internationalism. And then we'll have a panel discussion looking at discussions on the current liberation struggles in Africa, like Burkina Faso and so forth. So it's a wide-ranging discussion that seeks to basically put in historical context and pay tribute and commemorate Cuba's immense mission, as well as placing it in a local context, a current context.
This is Professor Isaac Saini, who, of course, is the coordinator of this event. By the way, I'll just tell our listeners, you can go to a different book list or call them at 416-538-0889 and to get more information and to indicate that you will be attending.
And it's a free event, I should mention to people. It's a free event.
It's just phenomenal. You know, you're saying the grandson of Nicholas Guillen. I mean, that it's kind of like it's maybe to get people oriented here. This is like the grandson of Walt Whitman. This is or Pablo Neruda. This is and he will be. Is it Friday? He'll be speaking at Steelworkers.
He'll be speaking Friday. He'll be there Saturday as well. He's quite a significant scholar in his own right, following in his grandfather's footsteps. He's not a poet per se, of course, but he's a scholar. And he's basically going to elucidate this relationship of Cuba and Africa, and also using his father's relationship with the late president of Angola, Agostinho Neto, who led Angola to independence, as being sort of the fulcrum, right, of his discussion of why so many Cubans, right? What is this profound historical connection between Cuba and Africa, and why this profound historical connection found such a profound and beautiful expression of solidarity when the Cuban Revolution triumphed.
Clarifies the strength of this country. I mean, when the U.S. has tried always to portray the relationship as the great, super, sleek, modern power and this poor country that it's trying to discipline. But 300,000 Cubans went to engaged in this struggle in Angola, and a successful one against the apartheid regime. That is a story the chapter in history needs to be emphasized. It is so striking. And by the way, a loss of lives. I think you have, is it 2,000, 5,000 casualties?
Yeah, 2,000 Cubans. About 2,500 give their lives lost in liberation struggles across Africa, and about 2,000 in Southern Africa alone.
And they thwarted a plan, which had it succeeded, I mean, all these struggles in that region would have been lost.
Yeah. You know, what they did was they stopped the racist apartheid state of South Africa from achieving regional domination. If they had achieved that, what would have happened would have been the South African apartheid state would have had extended its life. Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand that the battle to liberate South Africa took place as much outside its borders as inside. And in fact, many times more people died outside its borders, and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa acknowledged that. Hundreds of thousands of lives were destroyed, not only in terms of loss of life, but in terms of, people who were lacerated, who were maimed, right? As well as the immense economic damage was done by South Africa's war of terror that basically economically sabotaged the region. It's in that context that Cuba expressing its solidarity with Africa, expressing its debt to Africa, that there is a debt to be played, that humanity owes a debt to Africa, that Cuba went to Africa. And it's important to understand that I like to quote here Amilcar Cabral, who many people will know as a celebrated leader of the anti-colonial and national liberation struggles in Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde, one of the great intellectuals of the 20th century and a tremendous loss to Africa. And he said when Cuba began, helping the liberation movements in Africa, and particularly aiding Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde in training with doctors and so forth, and, also providing military advisors. And this is what Cabral said. He said, "I don't believe in life after death, but if there is, we can be sure that the souls of our forefathers who were taken away to America to be slaves are rejoicing today to see their children reunited and working together to help us be independent and free." And so in a sense, that sort of provides the context of why we entitled the conference Africa's Children Return. So replacing Cuba not only in the context of aiding other people who are involved in national and social liberation, but also as part of the African diaspora, one section of the African diaspora coming to aid the motherland of Africa. So we're placing it in that kind of context, but we're also looking at Cuba's ongoing solidarity with Africa. So one thing that Jorge Risquet said in a speech a few years ago, the late great Jorge Risquet, was that at one point when the national anti-colonial liberation struggles were raging throughout Africa, Cuba sent military advisors, and in the case of Angola, for example, sent soldiers to defend Angola's independence from racist apartheid South Africa. But he also said, we now, in this context, we send doctors, we send teachers, and so forth. So Cuba's solidarity has changed form, but not changed content. Yeah. And, for example, John Kirk will be presenting on Cuba's immense contribution to the fight against Ebola in West Africa.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Isaac Saini, and the event is, by the way, November 13th and 14th, United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. You can go to a different book list to learn more, and of course the number at the different book list, 416-538-0889, and make sure you attend, because Friday, as you begin Friday at November 13th at 7 p.m., and it'll be, I guess it's Dr. Guillen will be speaking.
Yeah. Yes.
And he will also be attending on Saturday, and that begins, that's November the 14th, from 10 a.m.
Yeah.
To 4 p.m., and it's Africa's Children Return, Cuba and Africa, African Liberation. Could you tell us a little more about, it was really remarkable. You had Mr. Riske at the event only 2 years ago, and he's a very big figure in all this. Give us a little outline of his life and role, if you could.
Well, he was an immensely modest and humble person, and he always said he was just performing his duty, right? His duty not only to the Cuban Revolution, because he was a revolutionary, but his duty to the struggle of humanity. But his role was a very significant one. He was Cuba's chief representative, chief diplomat in Africa in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and advising and playing an important role. What happens is that basically a central role he plays is in the negotiation process that took place between South Africa, Angola, the United States, and Cuba, that eventually led to the independence of Namibia, which had been illegally occupied by South Africa since 1916, and which had been waging an independent struggle, right, against racist rule to achieve black majority rule. Mm-hmm. This is what comes out of this and eventually accelerates the end of apartheid. So within this whole context, he was the main Cuban negotiator, and he played a very important role because at this stage, the South Africans, as some people may know, had launched a major offensive in 1987 to rescue what could only be described as their puppets, their surrogates, which was UNITA, run by Jonas Avimbi in Angola. And once they had achieved such an immense early military success that they decided they could now achieve a sort of like a knockout blow, deliver a fatal blow to the Angolan government, and therefore transform Angola into sort of a puppet state. Mm-hmm. And in this context, Cuba increased its military assistance, sent more reinforcements, and delivered a decisive military defeat to the Southern African forces. This altered the balance of power on the ground and basically allowed Cuba to enter the negotiations which the United States had been opposing, because there was a fear that what would happen is that the Cubans would now go into Namibia and drive down to South Africa, and what we would have would be a revolutionary overthrow of the Southern African government. The Cubans wanted to avoid further bloodshed. They had won on the battlefield, but they wanted this to be settled at the negotiation table. And what happened was, out of this, South Africa had to give up its control of Namibia, and once it did that, it basically signaled the end of the apartheid state. Nelson Mandela himself acknowledged this and so forth, and acknowledged that basically speaking, it was a Cuban military role which forced these negotiation process, which worked to the favor of the Southern African people, which accelerated not only his liberation, but the eventual dismantling of apartheid, whatever problems may arise later on. Mm-hmm. But Namibia ties its independence to those struggles. And Jorge Risquet played a very important role in those negotiations. At one point, Chester Crocker, who was a chief U.S. diplomat in those negotiations, trying to defend apartheid South Africa in many ways, comes up to Risquet, and he plaintively asks, are the Cuban troops going to advance from Angola into Namibia, right? Because he's worried about the consequences.
Yes.
And Risquet tells him, well, I can't give you a tranquilizer, right? In a sense, I'm not going to give you something to calm you down. I'm not going to tell you whether they're going to go in or not going, right? The point is, this has to be resolved at the negotiating table. And Fidel Castro actually gives a very important speech in June of 1988. This is when these negotiations are going on, in the summer of 1988. And he says, you know, basically speaking, you know, he talks about the so-called superiorists, the white South Africans who believed they were invincible and they were superior, had been beaten by black Angolans and also primarily by black Cubans and what the South Africans were considered mixed-race Cubans. So the superiorists had suffered a significant setback. And if Castro said, you know, this basically, you know, signals the end of apartheid because he says this has begun the process of negotiations, right? Mm-hmm. The apartheid has now been dealt its fatal blow. He talks about this very clearly and very presciently. So the mm-hmm. negotiation process in which Risket played a very central role, even though he always liked to diminish his role because of his humility, really sets in stage the end of the apartheid.
Yeah, we can't allow people who do great things to just walk off. We can't. They it's nice that they are humble, but we have to, like your program's going to do, underline what work they did do.
Yeah.
And the success of it.
Yeah. He always liked to say, you know, he was following, you know, he was a loyal Cuban, a soldier of the Cuban Revolution, and mm-hmm. that basically speaking, you know, he was just following Fidel Castro's instructions, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he played a much more important role than that, right? And the Cubans would acknowledge that, but it's a hallmark of the humility of Cubans.
Yeah.
For example, I'll give you two examples that have nothing directly to do with the conference, but we just had the Interior Minister of Cuba, Senor Colomé, who just retired. And, you know, he was a very important figure in the Cuban Revolution. He just spoke, I did my duty, that's all I did, right? Mm-hmm. And yesterday, as everyone well knows, the United Nations once again overwhelmingly voted in support of Cuba, 191 countries to two, only the United States and Israel opposing this resolution that supported Cuba against the economic war of Cuba, economic warfare waged by the United States against Cuba. And I had a conversation with the Cuban ambassador, and I said, this is the work of you and your diplomats, your hardworking Cuban mm-hmm. diplomats. And he said, no, this is basically the work of the people, right? They're very humble, right? And yeah. we see that in terms of Cuba's commitment to the African liberation struggles. Mm-hmm. They participated in it because they said that humanity had an unpaid debt to Africa and Cuba could make its modest contributions to African liberation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that humility is part of the secret of their success. It's the old thing of the proposition that you accomplish more if you don't worry about who's going to get credit.
Yeah.
This is Professor Isaac Saini, and the event is November 13 and 14, United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. On Friday, it begins at 7 p.m., and Saturday at 11, running to 4 p.m. And, of course, there's going to be this film. Who made this film, by the way?
Well, it's basically a film people put together. It's a BBC documentary, but also...
Did you say BBC?
Well, BBC did a documentary called mm-hmm. Cuba African Revolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we've asked permission to show it for educational purposes because this is a free event, and
great.
It has interviews with Jorge Risket and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, on the you know the one just in winding up, I want to emphasize it, underline. Here you have, again, this great power that always says that it's in charge of everything, the U.S., and increasingly the world is objecting to this. They announce that they're going to fight terrorism, and then we notice that other people seem to be better at it than they are. And they also were going to take on the leadership in fighting Ebola. But, again, here we move from military matters in the case of Ebola to skill and capacity and willingness, and it turns out the Cubans are exemplary. Could you talk just a little bit about that? Because that's part of your program, too, on November 13 and 14 at the Steelworkers
Hall. Well, the Cubans responded almost instantly to the Ebola issue, right? Mm-hmm. They called a regional meeting of Latin American Cuban states to discuss how best to confront Ebola. They sent the contingent. They had a couple doctors who got sick with Ebola while they were in West Africa and got treated and then returned, right, mm-hmm. To continue the fight. So Cuba made an immense contribution to the struggle against Ebola, bringing in medicine, setting up tents and so forth, right? And, you know, basically, people hear about Doctors Without Borders, hear about other people, but the Cubans provided the largest single contingent. Even the United States basically acknowledged this as well, right? The New York Times acknowledged it as well. And it was the largest single contribution of a country in terms of medical practitioners to carry on this fight. And their goal has always been not just simply to put medical practitioners on the ground, but also to build the healthcare systems of those particular countries. So mm-hmm. Cuba not only basically provided assistance in terms of directly fighting Ebola, but also shoring up the healthcare system in those respective countries. Last year, we had a tour of Dr. Portilla, who was a very important person in shaping Cuba's medical internationalist missions, a very historic figure, mm-hmm. and he spoke about Cuba's immense contribution, right, to fight against Ebola. John Kirk will be talking about this, right, Cuban Ebola, yet another example of Cuban medical internationalism. Mm-hmm. To basically place this in the context that Cuba has long had, since the beginning of the revolution, a commitment to medical internationalism. In fact, mm-hmm. during the Algerian national liberation struggle in North Africa, Cuba sent in 1960 a contingent of doctors, even though they had very few doctors basically in the island
so
at that time.
So it's the very first years of the Cuban Revolution.
Yeah, very first year.
Amazing.
It's amazing, right? So Cuba's contribution to the fight against Ebola was immense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had doctors. I mean, initially they sent well over 300 doctors and nurses and other medical personnel to carry on this fight with tents, with medicine, and so forth. And as everyone knows, Ebola is an extremely contagious disease and extremely virulent and has a high fatality rate. And yet even these people who had caught it and then eventually recovered, right, went yes. back to fight.
Yeah, and the courage of putting your doctors right in the field, because we noticed that on the side of the U.S., most of the personnel turned out to be military personnel,
yeah.
if my
military
memory is right. And the first thing they wanted to do was sort of make sure they had sealed it off from anybody.
Yeah.
You know, eventually, true medical professionals have to walk right into the situation. Otherwise, it's not going to be solved.
Yeah. Well, for Cuba, the important point is simply this, is that there is this unpaid debt to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point about this unpaid debt to Africa is that, you know, Cuba can play and can make a contribution to this because of the transatlantic slave trade and so forth. So there's this profound feeling mm-hmm. that there is a debt to Africa, and that, you know, Cuba, with its modest resources, will do its best to repay that debt.
Yeah. And really, it ought to be John Kirk, he will be speaking on Saturday about this.
Yes, he'll be speaking on Saturday about this. And as I said, his book, Healthcare Without Borders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Understanding Cuban Medical Internationalism is a book based on over maybe 10 years of interviewing Cuban doctors, right? Of mm-hmm. going where Cuban doctors have worked and so forth, right? So it's an immense accomplishment. It's an immense book that documents the scale, the dimensions, right, of mm-hmm. Cuba's medical internationalism, but also where do these roots come from, right? How can a small, poor country like Cuba have, over 30,000 doctors at any one time?
And making them available to other poor countries.
Yeah, making them available.
And even training Americans,
Well, they don't charge when for the services of their doctors, right, in the poorest of the countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's seen as simply an elemental duty of revolutionary solidarity, right, yeah. of your commitment to creating a better world.
Yeah.
Speak. So the Cubans always like to say, otro mundo mejor es posible, which is a better world is possible. Or otro mejor mundo es posible, yeah. depending on however you want to say it.
Yeah. And by the way, we were mentioning books. Professor Saini has a book, Cuba Revolution in Motion, which I assume will also be, I hope will be available at
well,
this
should,
event.
Should be, and also what I'm doing as well.
You always go to the different book list.
Yeah. Different book lists, and in fact, I've been long working on a book on Cuba's role in African liberation struggles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just finished the title of the conference, Africa's Children Return, is actually the title of my book.
Ah, well, it's very apropos. Listeners should go to a different book list in Toronto, and the number there is 416-538-0889. But you can also contact Professor Isaac Saini, 902-494-8810, to indicate to get more information and, of course, to arrange to attend.
Yeah.
It will be November 13 and 14 at the United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street, beginning Friday evening at 7 p.m. And the grandson of Nicolas Guillen is speaking.
Yeah, Nicolas Hernandez Guillen is a significant Afro-Cuban scholar in his right, very important person, will be, and he's the president of Nicolas Guillen Foundation, the grandson of the great Nicolas Guillen, and he will be discussing Cuba and African connections, right?
I have to confess I'm a a great fan, of course, of the poetry of Nicolas Guillén, and and I'm so that would put me in a category. I would go just to look at him. I don't care if he writes poetry. I want to look at the grandson of Nicolas Guillén.
Well, yeah, I mean, Guillén is such an immense figure, right, in Latin America, right, and in the African diaspora, the Black Atlantic, right, that he crisscrosses these things. And he had a, and Nicolas Guillén, the poet, the great poet, had a relationship with Agostinho Neto, right, and had a vision of Cuba and Africa, right. So he's going to be talking about.
So he's one of the creators of the of the policy in in that sense.
Yeah,
And of course, and John Kirk will be speaking Saturday.
And I will be speaking as well, and so forth. And the topics on Saturday, you know, Cuban African national liberation struggles, guilty of that's one workshop. Guilty of defending Africa, Soweto de Quito Carnaval, Cuba and the war to liberate Southern Africa, and Cuba and Ebola, yet another example of Cuban medical internationalism. And the last one will be current liberation struggles in Africa.
Well, that's we are all looking forward to that.
Isaac
Chaney, thank you very, very much. It's
always
a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Phil. It's always a pleasure being on your program, and all the best.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Isaac Chaney. You're listening to the Tater Report, CAT 89.5 FM. I wish I could talk as fast as Isaac Chaney. I'm trying. Now, Phil, we had some items. You wanted to mention... I guess it's just that we want people to on November 9th.
Just get ready. Go to the website. Don't wait till next week. You can go right now, CIUT.FM. There's a little virtual button on the website where you can press it and put your credit card information in, and the station will have your money 1 minute later. And why wait? Do it now.
Yeah.
And mention the Taylor Report.
Mention the Taylor Report. And Yelena, if you're listening, make sure you do that. We need your help. It is community radio, and... We have been doing this for a number of years, and very solid support. And, you know, like today, okay, we had Thomas Mountain, Eritrea. That is really going halfway around the world to get the news. And, of course, Isaac Chaney, a brilliant guy, and he also reminds us of something that people don't think about, which is that Cuba played a major role in the ending of apartheid. And it was hands-on work because they had to fight off the South African government.
Yeah, you didn't read that in the Toronto Star, I'll bet.
You did not get that. That's right. You will not find that in the Star, Globe, et cetera. Phil and I were just talking. There is a Saudi prince with a plane load of cocaine who's been stopped in Lebanon. You didn't find that in the Toronto Star either because, you know, now they regard the monarchs of the Gulf as part of the liberation struggle, you know, for the world. And we don't talk about these princes who have plane loads of drugs. And of course, in a country where they behead people for being writing poetry that is unflattering of the king or whipping them to death, et cetera. So now Mr. Trudeau is in. He inherits. Those are our friends in the Great War to try to destroy Syria. That's a terrible story. So you're listening, as I say, to Taylor Report. You can we're on Facebook, Facebook / The Taylor Report. And I think we have gotten there. Lucas, thank you very, very much. And Phil Conlon, I'm Phil Taylor. And next week, get ready. Come and help us build this community station. Become members. Go right now to CIT.FM, and you can start making pledges. Taylor Report, you can do it by PayPal or credit card. Hey, we'll see you next week. Sur les uns, sur les deux.